people to get started today. So welcome everybody to the EDC meeting. We're going to start with introductions. And I'm going to let, I'm your chair today. So Vance Tong, and next up, William.
William Gifford with the Oregon City Business Alliance and small business owner, and a few other pots that I stir.
Karina.
Good morning, Karina Copeland, Economic Development, Clackamas County.
Mr. Telford.
Hi, as most of you or all of you know, I'm new. I'm Michael Telford. I'm an independent consultant that does economic development work, mostly in developing countries, but I have done some in the United States, and I've also been involved in a few startups in the United States as well. So I'm really happy to be part of this group. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Sarah?
Good morning. My name is Sarah Ekman. I'm the interim director of Clackamas County Business and Community Services, of which economic development is a part of our department there. And welcome, Michael. We're really glad to have you.
Kimo?
Good morning, Kimo Rosa, Clackamas Federal Credit Union. I'm the chief lending officer, oversees business lending, mortgage, and consumer lending. And good morning and welcome, Michael.
Laura.
Good morning, everybody. Laura Edmonds, CEO of the North Clackamas Chamber and the Business Recovery Center.
Mr. Savas.
Paul Savas, Clackamas County Commissioner for the last 10 years and formerly a business owner in Clackamas County for 25 years.
Bridget?
Good morning, all. I'm Bridget Daisy, Executive Director of Clackamas Workforce Partnership with the local workforce development board that serves the area.
Thank you. Kyle?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kyle Lang. I'm the executive director over at the Cambie Area Chamber of Commerce and the Business Recovery Center and a board member with Clackamas Workforce Partnership with Bridget.
Cindy.
Good morning, everyone. Cindy Moore, Clackamas County Business and Community Services, Economic Development.
John.
I'm John Lamont. I'm the principal of Lamont West, which is a city planning and development consulting firm, and past 2020 chair of the commission.
Mr. Goodman.
Jeff Goodman, private investor and past member of the Lake Oswego City Council.
Lynn.
Lynn Wallace, economist with the mighty Oregon Employment Department. And it looks like we have another economist in the group. Welcome, Michael.
Monica.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Monica Cuneo. I'm with Co-Creative Consulting, and I'm working with Clackamas County to develop the Climate Action Plan.
Jody.
Good morning. Jody Bailey, Director of Membership Services for the Home Builders Association of Metro Portland. And welcome, Michael.
Sarah.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Allison. I'm a sustainability analyst, also working on the Climate Action Plan, and happy to be here to present to you.
Shannon.
Good morning. I'm Shannon Eilis. I'm a small business owner, realtor in Westland, and also on the Westland EDC.
Valerie.
Good morning. I'm the vice chair of the Oak Grove Community Council and the chair of the Park Avenue Community Advisory Committee, sitting in with you this morning.
Alyssa.
Good morning. Alyssa Mahar, vice chair of the EDC, and I'm also vice president of Clackamas Community College.
Peter.
Good morning. I'm Peter Lunsibo with Super Genius Studio and increasingly the chief operating or the CEO of Somos, our health tech startup, and I am off running around getting kids to school, so I'm not on video today.
And the 1971-284-1150.
Good morning, John. Good morning, John Legarza, Clackamas County Economic Development.
Welcome, John.
Welcome, John. Long time no see.
All right. Public communication. Do we have any comments from the public about anything coming up economic development wise? Hearing none. We'll go to commissioner updates. Mr. Savas.
Yeah, it looks like I don't have any colleagues with me this morning. I think the big news that's going on right now is the federal money that's going to be coming our way. We're not really sure about all of it. When I say sure about it, either more in the lines of what we can spend it on, guidance, we're calling it. That's part of the American recovery dollars that are coming, approximately $81. We expect that that'll be for assistance for those who struggled in some way or responding to economic impacts. There's also some earmarked dollars for infrastructure. And the definition of infrastructure by this bill seems to be broadened beyond what most people would think is infrastructure, which is kind of exciting in ways. So transportation, bridges, rail, roads, highways, and broadband, and apparently it's also going to go to more of this of the service side, perhaps even things like childcare and so forth. So we'll know here pretty soon. I believe the president's going to make a speech today. Perhaps he'll reveal some more detail about that. We also have some other money that's coming from the state, and that's those state dollars are were derived from federal dollars. So we're waiting for guidance on that. So there's a lot of money pent up, but there's a lot of money in the system or coming into the system here pretty soon. And so we are seeing some inflationary aspects right now. And as we know, the governor, as of yesterday, is putting Clackamas County and Clackamas County, Multnomah County, and Marion County, and several others into extreme risk. So we are extremely busy trying to deal with the impacts of that. And there's just so much going on right now, too much to list. And I think I might be better in assisting anyone if there's questions this morning, as opposed to just sitting here and talking to you, because there's just too much here to list. So I'll just stop there and see if anyone has any questions. Thank you.
All right, any questions for Commissioner Savas? Wow, Paul, you did a great job there.
It did not easy, thank you.
As I'm sure you would, you know, just let us know if there's things with regards to any of these federal or state monies, if you need letters of support or anything like that, you know, we'd be happy to look at whatever we need to do.
We'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much, Vance.
You're welcome. Okay. If there's nothing else for commissioner updates, we'll go to EDC bylaw revisions. Sarah, would you like to illuminate everyone on that?
Good morning. That's a great piece here. So I may need a little bit of help from some folks to go back to our executive committee meeting in terms of where we left. So there have been some bylaw revisions, and I believe that Karina, have we circulated the revisions in track changes for the whole group at this point?
I don't believe we have. Yeah, okay. I don't think we did distribute.
Okay.
Yeah, I am sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. I just wanted to make sure I'm on the right track. So basically, the executive committee has been making some recommended revisions to the bylaws for the group. And we talked through those at the last meeting and have a marked up document. So we want to open this up to the group for a comment period and circulate that. Some of the major changes in executive committee members, please let me know if I miss anything here, but some of the major changes or conversations that happened, we considered going down to a smaller group number, and that then decided that we should stick at the 25. So if you recall earlier conversations, we had considered 15, and rather than doing that, we have intended and left it at 25 members. Also, there's some groups identified with, excuse me, having trouble this morning with my voice, in terms of goals for representatives within certain sectors that we want to be sure are included. And the intent behind this is really trying to increase the business representation on the EDC across a wide variety of sectors so that it's not in any one particular area. And so there's a recommended list, and I can go in and, you know, we'll circulate this so that you can comment, but it has small and large business. We've reached out to our partners and have some good info on how to define. And so I think we did micro business, small business, medium, and large. And we have some employee counts that are recommended in those. So we'll be doing that. And then we have some of the major sectors there too. So we will open this up for a comment period and, you know, circulate it so that you can provide your feedback. And then once we have a final draft, we'll be sending this to our county council for review and ultimately get that approved. So Vance, did you have anything else?
I just wanted to say that thanks go out to John and Alyssa for spearheading this effort. It has been a great, great help and helping define what we're doing there. And I also wanted to comment on the employee counts that when everybody sees these recommended changes, we're taking those recommended employee counts from other standards that have been accepted at the state level. So these aren't just random numbers that we've come up with on our own, as much fun as that might be, but that's not what we did. How soon do you think we'll be able to get those circulated out to the general board?
I think we can do that as a follow-up to this meeting. Karina, I see you jumping on.
I absolutely can. And also, just so you all know, this version that Sarah's speaking of is in the packet.
Perfect.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Can you identify which page?
Thanks, Vance.
Hey, that's why we pay you the big bucks.
Vance?
Yes, John.
Just for the sake of us reinforcing in our minds the different sectors, because we do want to broaden the representation, I can read them in 1 minute here. I mean, the county target sectors that have been formed by our economic development staff and the county board are professional services, healthcare, wholesale trade, high tech, and advanced manufacturing. And then the other sectors that we spelled out, because we want to, again, try and fine grain to get more representation, would be, as Sarah said, micro business, 1 to 10 employees, small business, 10 to 50, medium business, 50 to 250, and then the large, big ones, 250 plus employees. Education would be a category, construction a category, and then real estate a category, and then tribal representative a category. So the idea is really to make sure we try and go as broad as we can, because we do have a very diverse business sector here in the county.
Karina, I hate to dispute you, but I am not seeing it anywhere in the packet.
Bonnie, I just read the categories, but people can look at them when they can.
Right.
I know. Right. I just looked. I'm going to email it right now.
Okay.
Everybody.
So when you get that, you know, everybody, please take a look at them. You've got a whole month to look at them. And how do we want to handle? Do we just want to do feedback in the general meeting next month?
I think, why don't we do a comment period using track changes? Folks can submit them back to Karina, and then we can have a summarizing conversation and final comments at the next meeting.
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Nothing further on EDC bylaws at this time. So let's move on to Bridget Daisy.
Good morning. Karina, will you be able to share the slides? It's good to be talking with you all today. I would say that this quality jobs initiative is certainly, we're at the beginning phase of planning. So we're gonna be really eager to continue dialogue with the Economic Development Commission moving forward. And this is an initiative that we are spearheading with our Columbia Willamette Workforce Collaborative Partners Work Systems and Workforce Southwest Washington. They are our partners to the north that also serve the Portland metro area. If you want to keep going up. The Quality Jobs Initiative, that slide's fine. The one, yes, perfect. Workforce development and equity has been a central pillar of our community's conversation for several years now. Right now, we're hearing from a lot of businesses and employers that finding talent is a real challenge, and that is not a new situation. I'll remind everyone that prior to the pandemic, there was a one-to-one match for the unemployment rates were so low that for every job that was available, there was a person that was looking for that job. And so the pandemic only slowed that challenge for our community. And when we think of the workforce and business needs, we don't see that as a zero-sum game. So the idea that the talent that businesses are trying to attract and the jobs that people are needing in order to support themselves and their families should be a win-win for both parties involved. Why are we struggling to find attract applicants and retain quality members? Well, there's lots of reasons why people choose to pick the careers and the jobs that they end up moving on to. And also it has to do with, you know, culture and retaining talent. A business or an employer might have all of the best intentions of diversifying their workforce. And it's all about an inclusive, it's all about inclusion and how people feel at work. So this Quality Jobs Initiative is something that has been piloted and done across the country in various regions. In your materials, you will cite a couple of states and communities that have taken on a Quality Jobs Initiative. And there are some real common themes that have come out of that. But since the Portland metro region and Clackamas are unique, we're going to make sure that this is a community-driven framework that includes the voice of people, community, our local stakeholders, and the businesses that will be helping inform the work. Next slide. So the purpose of this is to, again, bring all of those voices together to ensure that we have a common framework that will be not just a static thing that we point to, but it will be a dynamic conversation so that we can really have meaningful conversations with our public. There are lots of reasons why businesses are struggling to find people right now, besides the fact that we just have a people shortage in this country and in this area, but we also have a talent mismatch. So we need to think differently about what our public workforce system can do to help support and what our community is responding to the changing economy. What is true today will not be true next year. And so we need to be able to have these conversations that may say what needs to change and how are we willing to change? Next slide. The guiding principles of the Quality Jobs Initiative is to, again, advance workforce equity. We want to make sure that we're aligning the investments that we're making in the public workforce system to the demand from the business side of things. How we talk about what is important to the Clackamas area or to the multiple communities that reside within the Clackamas area. What's true in Malala will not be true in Lake Oswego, and we know that. And so what we want to be able to do is develop a framework that has enough flexibility to understand that the needs are different for our business and employers, as well as the people. A quality job to me is not the same as a quality job to Vance. So the blueprint for the companies will be about how to make improvements change the way that they've been doing things in order to attract and retain talent. And for the public workforce system to be able to respond to those needs that the business community will have to be able to say, yes, we have quality jobs, or we're working to have quality jobs, and quality jobs in this category may look this way for certain people. And so we want to make sure that there's some flexibility and sensitivity to the differences and nuance. And this is not about being an exclusive program or initiative. This is really to help change the dialogue and the discourse that is happening around jobs and employment in our region. If a business or an employer comes to the table and says, you know, I really struggle and I don't know that I can pay a lot more than I'm paying now, and the same for benefits, there are ways to tell their story that will be a positive, that will be received positively from people. And so how can the public workforce system help with that storytelling and marketability of those jobs? And of course, it is about being data driven. Although labor market intelligence will say certain things based on historical numbers, and we know that we have a care community or service jobs that have been undervalued in our society for quite some time, childcare, early care, education, home care providers, CNAs. We have a lot of occupations that do not make a living wage or a housing wage. And those conversations are as important to a quality jobs initiative as the jobs that are already existing in the healthcare industry or tech companies. Next slide. So some themes that we're seeing across the country in various quality jobs initiatives include everything from wages that meet basic needs and allow people to both save for retirement and cover the things that they need to in order to feel like they're thriving in community. It also includes benefits beyond just health care coverage or PTO, but what other benefits may need to be emphasized, like working conditions or flexibility with schedule. We have a lot of women who have left the workforce because they do need to be they're taking care of children or family members that need support. And we need and they're going to need some level of flexibility in order to manage their responsibilities at home as well as in the work environment. The stable and predictable work hours, if somebody is going into a job and that occupation or that job opportunity is tenuous and it may or may not be there in 3 to 6 months, that's going to be a lot harder for folks to recruit. Because there's a shortage of people, that means people are going to have options. And so how we talk about what those options are and how do we attract people to these, to all of the jobs that we're needing for our economy and to keep our community moving, it's about elevating that conversation in a way that says, we're with you, community members, the business community wants to learn from you and people want to learn from the business community. So how do we develop that stronger partnership? We're also seeing that advancement in career pathways and having a more clearly articulated career journey is something that is a real asset for companies and occupations. And you know, investing in professional development and helping people advance in their occupations. Now, those are some central themes from other areas like San Diego or places in Texas or Illinois or Nashville, but we may discover that there are some other areas or tenets of a quality jobs initiative that we'll make sure to incorporate based on community engagement and feedback. Next slide. So what we're really talking about is the San Diego Workforce Partnership, that they have a really fantastic model that they developed again with local stakeholders. Their tenants were similar to the things that I was just mentioning around raising the floor and making sure that that the needs of workers are being acknowledged, that the ladders and the lattices that need to, that people want to go into. We have a lot of young and youth and young adults that may not have been starting their job until their mid 20s, which sounds really bizarre to those of us who began working as early as 14, 15, 16. But if that's the age that they're getting into it now, how are we attracting them at earlier in their career or earlier in their life so that they can build those foundational skills that we know will be necessary in a 21st century economy? And what are those job features that they're really promoting that speak to family and work-life balance to attract and retain that talent? Next slide. So these are the goals that San Diego set forward or that they set forward in their Quality Jobs Initiative. And these are goals. These are things that they're going to try to attain. And so in the Portland metro area, we would like to set similar goals or our own metrics of success and define what success will mean for our community. Next slide. So the next part of this presentation is our questions, and we're not gonna have enough time to go through each of the questions to dig into what is a quality job? What does a quality job mean to you? What does a quality job mean to a family member of yours or to people that you talk to or the businesses that you work with? I would like to just ask that people put in the chat feature any of their questions or things that to consider about what a quality job is or how we want to move forward with this initiative. And then Karina, if you would be able to share those comments back with me, that would be outstanding. Next slide. So we're going to go through the questions pretty quick. So what are the characteristics of a quality job? If you have some thoughts on that, feel free to add those to the chat feature. Next slide. What should be considered in creating wage and benefit standards? Childcare has been a point of conversation for some time now. We are in a childcare desert. Housing is another crisis that we're in the midst of. Transportation continues to be an issue, especially for some rural communities and folks that are transit dependent. So what else do we need to also be thinking about and considering? Next slide. What are the characteristics of an employer that offers quality jobs? And there are many, many employers in our network that have quality jobs now, or maybe have quality jobs and they don't realize like how attractive their jobs are. And so how can the public workforce system elevate those opportunities and make sure that they're connecting to all of the resources that are available if they're needing them, and also helping the rest of the businesses in their community and being a voice of, you know, we offer quality jobs. It's a real benefit to our bottom line and helping with that peer-to-peer interaction. Next slide. And then how do you see your organization or entity being more involved in quality in this initiative, and how can you add value or input and feedback to this work moving forward? Next slide. So we're on the beginning part of stakeholder engagement and really testing or discussing or talking with our different partners, board members, councils across the region in order to gain as much insight as we begin this work. We're also in the process of recruiting. We have an RFP out right now for a facilitator to help prop up a committee, a group that's going to be helping to identify like the overarching goals of what engagement should look like, who's involved, and what are our next steps over the course of the next 6 months to a year. Next slide. And Brian and Amy are our go-tos for questions. Of course, you can certainly field or send any of those my way, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or concerns that you may have. And I'd love to meet one-on-one with anyone on this call, or if you know others that might be interested in having a discussion or talking more about this, I would love to meet with them. And since I will have to be leaving this call for an 8:30, I did want to just share a few other highlights from the public workforce system and kind of some work that we're doing, since I won't be on the call later. But before I give all of those kind of updates, are there any questions, heartache or headache about this? What comes to mind when you think of a quality jobs initiative, just to make sure that we're not missing any opportunities right at the beginning? And you can close out the slides, Karina, so that we can see each other as a group.
Shannon, you had a question?
Yeah, this is great, Bridget. Thank you. Is there anything that's being done, or is there anything being considered to remove bias in hiring, either racial bias, gender bias? That's my biggest question.
Yeah. There are many opportunities that employers can look at to reduce some of that. Policies will need to be revised. I think that there's some best practices that we can glean from employers. Again, since we're on the beginning of this, there's going to still need to be a lot of research, and businesses and employers stepping forward and saying, this is what I've done. I think something to point to is the Partners in Diversity study they did last year, where they asked BIPOC community members that both moved to the Portland metro area and or moved away from the Portland metro area because of the culture. That's a really sobering report. And it also offers on the backside of the report and the analysis is a series of recommendations of what employers can do to both attract and retain talent. And so I encourage everyone to go to the Partners in Diversity website. They have some excellent suggestions there, but those are just the tip of the iceberg. I think it really is from what I've been learning more about how we talk about race and issues of equity in our community, that so much of it is about how we work on ourselves and work from within and then move that outward. And so I do think that there's a lot of movement across multiple communities. I know Lake Oswego and West Lynn and Oregon City and lots of communities have propped up equity councils or community groups to have these conversations, because this is really a community dialogue. So, but we'll keep searching for those, because I do think that it is about, from the messages when a job is both posted and then all the way through. Other questions? Excellent.
Sounds like you did a great job, Bridget.
Okay, so just a few things on updates. Last month we had a really well-attended, well-received healthcare hiring event. This is something that we do with our Portland Metro partners, with WorkSource and other community stakeholders that make up the public workforce system. This month we have a manufacturing hiring event. We'll make sure to get information to this group so that you can share, and if you have manufacturers that would be interested in participating or people who would like to join, help spread the word, that would be amazing. There's going to be a youth job fair in the early part of, I just want to make sure I get this right, in the early part of June. So we'll be sharing some information out that way. This is going to be a virtual job fair. The manufacturing event is a virtual job fair. There are also drive-through job fairs that are happening across the metro region too. So be on the lookout for that information, either on our social media accounts, our website, or through some of our listservs. We did make a request, Clackamas Workforce Partnership did make a request to Clackamas County to co-host a town hall for the conversation of a listening session for those that are unemployed or in between jobs or career changers. And really the idea of that town hall, our hope is to both make sure that it's interpreted in Spanish and Russian, but also to listen to people and hear people and say, like, what's getting in your way of going back to work? How can we learn from you about what your challenges and barriers are, and what can we do to help remove some of those barriers? We know that there's lots of reasons why different people are not going back to work right now. Some by their own choosing, and others because they just don't have any other options. And so we want to learn from the community to kind of ground truth our assumptions and make sure that we hear directly from people, and then we can hopefully have a more cohesive response to what those needs are. And I think it's a preliminary conversation to Quality Jobs Initiative. And the last thing that I would say is WorkSource Clackamas, the doors of WorkSource Clackamas, though they have been physically closed, WorkSource Clackamas has still been operating virtually. And the numbers of people who have been wanting jobs and needing that number starting to tick up. But what I would like to tell this group is that over the next 3 months, there's going to be a phased-in approach for UI recipients. By this Friday, Oregon City, WorkSource Oregon or WorkSource Clackamas, the Oregon City branch, and all of the UI recipients in our region, in the Clackamas region, will be receiving a letter from the Oregon Employment Department that says, hey, you really should get engaged with WorkSource. They offer all of these, the suite of resources. Please let us know if you have questions. Now's the time to go set up your iMatch skills profile and get registered and to take advantage of these things. Within a month from or by the end of May, beginning of June, there will be another letter. So the first one is, hey, you really should. The second one is like, hey, you really should. It's time to get engaged, because within the next month or so, we're going to start, if you're not doing job search or don't have those activities to be able to report, you may lose your benefits. Now, for people who are engaged in training or wanting to start their own business, there are programs like Training Unemployment Insurance and Self-Employment Assistance, where somebody could be taking those tracks because that's what's right for them and still collecting their benefits, but that's by application. And so we're going to have to make sure that we're communicating what those opportunities are to the public ahead of time. And then by July, people may start losing their benefits as a result of not conducting or getting engaged with WorkSource and so not getting engaged, and then also not being able to say, hey, I've been in the job search and looking for work actively. And so within the next several months, we know that in the public workforce system and WorkSource Clackamas, we're going to see a huge tsunami of people coming in through our system. And so the coordination with all of our partners, with Clackamas County, Clackamas Community College, Education Service District, all of our school districts, all of our nonprofit and community-based organizations, and other support services that will help people reach their goals, we need to be walking in lockstep. So there's a lot of work to do in the next few months, and I think it will be an asset to assess our public workforce system and how we connect as partners, which is also the ask of Senate Bill 623 that we're really hopeful will pass. And even if it doesn't pass, we have commitments from the governor's office and the state agencies that an assessment will be happening, and it will be happening on a more regular and ongoing basis of how the public workforce system is responding to the needs of our local communities and at a state level. Any questions or comments about any of those highlights?
Doesn't sound like it. Oh, sorry.
I did have one quick one. And I don't know if you partner with or provide any sort of recommendations on childcare. I think that, you know, we know that is a discussion, and that's going to be keeping people out of work. Especially, I know school is limited right now, you know, with a couple hours, but especially as we go into summertime and people will need more full-time childcare. What kind of resources and what kind of, or where do you point people to kind of find those types of resources?
That's a great question. There are lots of initiatives and things to be pointing to. If you want kind of like that full expanse of who's doing what where and what does the public or what does child care support and early care support, the early learning hub that Clackamas County's Children, Family, and Community Connections Division oversees through Health, Housing, and Human Services. That's a really good place to see, you know, what's on the cutting edge of what's happening both locally as well as around the state. The child care issue is a multifaceted problem. So it's about affordability, accessibility, and then the workforce and providers are not making a living wage. And so what we're talking like, that's a really big issue. There's not going to be an easy button to solving this issue. I'm really encouraged that, that Senator Wyden is supporting, the bill that Senator Warren shepherded forward on, universal child care and early learning. This will not be solved without some significant public subsidy, but we all benefit when childcare is available for our little ones and all the way through age 12 and 13. It is part of building infrastructure. The first 5 years of life are so important to lifelong success. If somebody experiences trauma or doesn't get those skills that they need really early on, they will or could struggle in other parts of their life, including employment and job training. And so what we're going to, when I think of workforce development and the future of workforce development, it's babies. And so so this is going to be a community need for us to solve together. We're also working on a pilot request or a phased in pilot request for apprenticeships for early care workers. There are other it's apprenticeable. And so we're working with East Cascades in Southern Oregon to plan on how to prop up an apprenticeship program and then phase it in our three regions and then look for opportunities to phase in the rest of the counties across the state, because we need an earn while you learn model. Because right now teachers, I mean, it's already a profession. They have to learn about human development. They are professionals, and they need to be compensated as such. And so it's something that we're going to be working through with our legislative partners, the Early Learning Division, the Department of Ed, and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, in addition to AFSCME and some of the other key players that are working in this space to elevate that profession as a meaningful and important career step.
Commissioner Savas, you have a question?
It's more of a comment. I just want to just mention that this workforce issue is, and childcare issue, actually I want to touch on both, is a huge challenge, especially with all this money coming in for building things and doing things, all these federal dollars, and there's not the capacity, the human capacity to actually exercise all those dollars, let alone other gaps in reaching some of those goals or spending those dollars. But I do want to say that I think there needs to be greater recognition that a interim substitute for some of these childcare challenges is frankly the platform we're on right now, this virtual platform, whether it's Teams or Zoom or whatnot, that working at home and trying to manage childcare at home while you're working is an interim or perhaps a permanent solution to do a workaround. It's a big deal. We need as many people in the workforce, and that also goes for our equity, diversity, and inclusion with other populations that need the training and the opportunity to step into the workforce. So I just think right now I think we have a little bit of a challenge trying to get people to recognize the potential of the virtual workplace. Thank you.
Good comments. Any other questions for Bridget? All right. Well, moving on from Bridget, thank you. Climate Action Plan presentation. Monica, you're up.
I am actually going to be kicking this one off. Thank you.
Okay, Sarah.
Thanks. Karina, if I can share my screen, I can control the slides.
You should be able to share.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you. Really appreciate you having us here at your meeting. I'm Sarah Ellison again. I'm a sustainability analyst here at the county, and I help to coordinate the county's climate action plan. And Monica Cuno is here with me, and she is our engagement lead. So she'll be focusing in this presentation on more of how we specifically hope to engage with this group and the broader business community. So for our conversation today, we are hoping to provide some information about the Climate Action Plan project, really recognizing that both climate change itself and climate action and changes to climate policy will absolutely have an impact on the business community. There will definitely be challenges and also some opportunities, and we want to make sure that we are acknowledging those and building those into the planning process as we move forward. And then we'll also be talking more about our hopes for how we want to engage the business community broadly and the Economic Development Commission specifically, and then we'll have some time for questions at the end. And so the Climate Action Plan, or CAP as we often call it, is a goal set forward by the Board of County Commissioners. In Performance Clackamas, which is our strategic plan, we have this goal to adopt a climate action plan by 2023 with the specific goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the words in there to make sure that it's clear, because there's definitely some jargon in that. So carbon neutrality is when we absorb as much carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases as we emit, and being carbon neutral globally by 2050 has been recognized by international scientists as a key goal to avoid many of the worst and most irreversible consequences of climate change. And this is a big goal, and it's fundamentally about minimizing future climate impacts. And 2050 is 30 years in the future, more or less. And that can seem really far away, but we absolutely have to start taking ambitious action now if we are going to reach this goal. And so the Climate Action Plan will lay out a broad path for those next 30 years and what we need to do to bring down our emissions in that time. In addition to that, we'll also be grappling with the climate impacts that are already happening, thinking about the wildfires and the ice storms and things that are happening more intensely and more frequently, and how we can make sure that we are ready to address those issues and minimize them where possible. And then this plan is also countywide in scope. And so that means that we're looking at the county as an organization, but also the full geography of the county. And that means that we're working with all of our partners. We're working with cities, we're working with the business community, with other organizations and individual community members. And we also have a presentation on our website, and the link to the website is at the end of this presentation. So if you are interested in more of the details of sort of how we are pulling this together, there's absolutely places to do that. So as we have been working on this project, we have hired an exciting consultant team to help us work on this. We had 10 different teams submit proposals, and we selected the team led by SSG, or Sustainability Solutions Group. What If is our modeling lead, and Monica, as I mentioned, with Co-Creative, is the lead of our engagement efforts. So part of what really stood out about this team is the level of analysis that they offer. And so this and the next slide show just some examples of some of the analysis that they're bringing to this work to make sure we get a full picture of the impacts of different climate action. So this looks at costs and returns to make sure that we are really looking at the financial impact of the climate actions that are selected. And then we also are looking at employment. We're looking at what are the jobs that can be created and where are areas where we may see some job loss so that we can plan ahead for those types of impacts. And so just to dig a little bit more into our process. We're starting here with data collection and creating a baseline that we can sort of use as our planning foundation, and then figuring out, okay, what does business as usual look like? If we don't change anything, what are the impacts likely to be? What are the impacts of some different alternative paths that we can look at? And then really refining what are the actions that we want to take as a community? And so pushing into that, there's a lot of different inputs. There's the data inputs, which we've already been working with. There's also multiple points of community engagement, and that includes the community at large, but also a lot of our specific partners. And then what will come out of that? I am lagging on my screen. What is going to come out of that is a series of different products that help to summarize each one of these layers. So if you think of this as sort of our roadmap for how we are going to achieve a climate action plan that reaches carbon neutrality and really incorporates the voices of the community, this is our path for doing that. And now I'm going to pass it off to Monica to talk more about that specific engagement piece and how we would like to work with the business community.
Thank you, Sarah. So as you see on this slide, we've got these, it looks a little bit linear, but we've got these opportunities where we're wanting to engage with the broader community and the communities within Clackamas County. And so if you go to the next slide, Sarah, this talks a little bit about some iterative pathways, the ways that we want to engage with individuals, sectors, and everything in between, communities, geographical communities, racial and ethnic communities, in order to bring in the perspectives, needs, priorities, ideas, to provide the input that we need in order to end up with a climate action plan that is representative, relevant, and has a high success, has a high probability of success in being implemented. So these are the broad types of engagement that will be utilized throughout the plan development. We started the project with doing a series of stakeholder interviews, and I see some familiar faces within this group. I had some conversations with some folks to lay the context, particularly for the consultant team, as well as just what are the preferred methods and best strategies for engaging communities across Clackamas County? Where might we hit roadblocks? Where are some opportunities to leverage into the future? And that went into building a community engagement plan, as well as really advising on what are the best tactics to use. So what you see here are some of those tactics. Communication through e-news, social media, and through the website, so people have a touch point to understand the process and to be following along with the work, and also to hear about opportunities for engagement. We'll also be convening a community advisory task force. This is a 24-member cross-sector team and topic-specific subcommittees. And this is where we'll talk a little bit more in detail with you all about how you might be able to be involved. We'll have ongoing surveys so that while there are opportunities for people to be engaged at a deep level through this advisory task force and subcommittees, we also want to provide opportunities for people to weigh in at the 20, 30, 40,000 foot view so that we're collecting information at various levels. Community listening sessions, we'll hold probably around 4 cross-sector community listening sessions as we get closer to having ideas and the actual actions to test, as well as focus groups with specific populations and audiences to, again, ensure that we're being as representative as possible. So next slide. This is what we have done to date. Again, the several interviews, we solicited applications for participants for the Community Advisory Task Force. We had over 60 folks apply and ended with around 24 folks. We have kicked off a youth advisory task force that also has around 25 youth. Is that right, Sarah? Ranging in age from 14 to 24. And they have met 2 or 3 times at this point. We are finalizing our engagement plan and have done a series of presentations to both community groups as well as Clackamas County entities. And we're we're really, really close to convening the Community Advisory Task Force. So next slide. So business engagement. As part of the subcommittee concept, so again, we've got the Community Advisory Task Force that is broadly the group that will be most closely connected to the process of the climate action plan. So this group will be reviewing the modeling data, looking at lots of charts like the ones that Sarah provided for you, lots of projections and modeling to understand at the deepest level in order to make informed recommendations and decisions as a group. And that is what will then become the climate action plan. So as part of the CATF, we want to also have subcommittees. And these subcommittees will be topic specific in order to provide a deep dive on the perspective that the subcommittee could hold. So right now we're looking at a city subcommittee, the Youth Advisory Task Force, a rural subcommittee, and a business subcommittee. We've been in conversation with a handful of members of this group in order to just kind of test the idea of what could it look like to work with the business community in Clackamas County. And a couple of approaches have surfaced. So one, we could continue to engage with all of you as the Economic Development Commission to serve as a broad body or a broad group of folks that we could come to and provide presentations and solicit feedback kind of at a higher level. We could also consider developing a business subcommittee that is comprised of self-selected members of this group, in addition to outside members, folks who are not part of the EDC, that you guys think would be particularly interested and informative to the development of the CAP. And we could also ask for help and from you all in helping to broker and give us opportunities or ideas for groups, chambers, other development commissions, organizations, geographies that you think that we should connect with as to convene as part of a focus group or to invite to some of those cross-sector listening sessions or to provide presentations to, et cetera. So we're hoping that, today that we can get a little bit of feedback from you all about what are opportunities for us to engage with you all from your own personal perspective, as well as of what you know from the business community. I also just want to mention that as part of the CATF, so this, you guys would not be the only business voice that we already have established with the project. We currently have representatives from North Clackamas Chamber of Commerce, Bob's Red Mill, and then we have three small business owners that represent businesses in Molalla, Milwaukee, Sandy, and Canby. So I'm going to pause there. And Sarah, our next slide is our thank you slide, correct? Oh, next steps. Okay, so let me just talk about next steps. And then let's go back to, we can ask some questions. So again, we're on the precipice of really kicking off the CATF, which has been, it's very exciting, and finalizing our engagement plan, which will lay out all of the external engagement strategies that we will be using, and then kicking off these subcommittees. And then, of course, we'll be doing as many updates to the public as possible and would love to be invited back to this group in order to provide updates to you all as well. And now it's a thank you and question slide.
William, you have a question?
Actually, there's probably three comments. One is I need to give credit and quote General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who said, "The plan is nothing. Planning is everything."
Mm.
And I appreciate the process you're going through, but I'm trusting that this is not going to be a static plan. And that ties into my next comment and the fact that there's by 2050. I hope that you don't see that that's the end of anything.
Mm.
The bigger question to me is, after we achieve that carbon neutrality, how do we sustain that? How do we keep from sliding back into it again? And how can we press it even further? So I would hope that that is not just the wall that we need to meet and not go beyond it. The last comment that I would have is regarding the business community is that I think it's essential that the message realize that businesses are in the business of doing business, and they are going to be concerned with bottom lines. And if any of the if the actions that are going to be proposed need to find some way of affecting businesses' bottom lines. So as the old cartoon said, wait at the climate change conference, the guy stood up and said, wait, what if all of this is just a hoax and all we wind up with is a cleaner planet? You know, I hope that the businesses understand that by doing something about it, it's going to improve their bottom line. That's all I want to say.
Can I just respond just to that last comment, William? Thank you for your comments. That this was absolutely a theme that came up in our interviews and what we know of doing climate action planning in other communities. That it's not a unique need, and so we are looking from the data and modeling side and how can we quantify bottom line from a county perspective, as well as how do we communicate it. So that's something that we want the business subcommittee to help us prioritize those tactics, talking points, as well as data points.
Thank you.
All right. Shannon, you got a question?
Yeah, just a quick question, and you may have said it and I missed it. Are you inviting, is it by invitation only for businesses to give you the input, or are you announcing it and those who want to participate can?
How about like a yes, both and? I mean, ultimately what I would love to get feedback from you all. Our proposal-ish is that a subcommittee form, and what we have heard from folks from the executive committee and from a couple other folks within the EDC was a suggestion around a subcommittee forming from the EDC, so that you all could either choose to self-select or nominate, and as well as suggest additional names outside of the EDC that could be part of the group. But ultimately, we want a business subcommittee. We would love it to be tied with work that's already happening within Clackamas County. And we are available to come and present at ad hoc and find other ways to engage as well.
Monica, how many people are you envisioning on this subcommittee?
I would prefer to have up to 10 people, so somewhere in the zone of 6 to 10. And just for a couple other logistical details, that we would meet around monthly for about 6 months, and that wouldn't necessarily be a consecutive 6 months, but you could plan for about 6 meetings over the course of about 6 to 9 months for around 2 hours.
Lynn, do you have a question?
Yes, this is great to hear about what's happening and all the energy behind it. At this point that you're at, are there any plans to do like sector surveys? Especially I'm thinking Clackamas County has a relatively large manufacturing sector.
Mm.
A lot of these manufacturing firms have very, very different energy needs than a lot of the other service sectors. And it'd be really interesting to hear what their concerns are in the future about how they would run their company, et cetera, et cetera.
That's really interesting. And I would just say that we have plans for surveys, and this is the type of information that a subcommittee could help with, is narrowing in on how do we engage the kind of subsectors within the business community, what, how do we, yeah, who and how do we prioritize those groups and how do we want to engage them?
John, you have a question?
So Monica and Sarah, if you're asking for 10 folks to form this subcommittee of the EDC, if I got this right, to work with you, do you?
Oh, no, yes. I'm sorry. Wrong. No, no. Go ahead, John. You're right. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah. So 10 business folks or representatives coming out of the EDC as a small working group, or is it 10 businesses in general of which some people from the commission could be on it? Just to clarify that. And then if it's us, you want us to actually reach out the next couple of weeks through our network to get people to join up?
So I'm going to take a stab at this, and Sarah, I'd love for you to weigh in. And I also, both Sarahs, because I know if you're still here, my screen's not showing all of the faces. But when we talked with the executive committee, and I think even prior to that with some of the staff that support this group, it was suggested that we do a both and. So 10, up to 10 people, and looking for people that can represent multiple views, and that some of those folks might not be currently on the EDC. So I have all these acronyms now, the PDNA, which I'm completely forgetting what that stands for.
PDNA.
You're thinking the PNDC, the Pacific Northwest Defense Coalition. We also mentioned the Oregon City Business Alliance, the Clackamas County Business Alliance, and some of the other organizations representing business in the county.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yes. And so that's the both and. So folks, what is the right mix? And I think I'm less attached to, you know, if it's a 50-50 split or something, as much as how do we get the best representation on the group. And you guys have a strong grasp on who is a participant within the business community and who you might think would be a good representative.
All right. And so then the next question is, do you want us to do that in the next couple of weeks and do a reach out to our members and ask them to sign up to see if they're interested, or how or maybe the Sarah Ekman question and Cindy, just what's our follow-up to get people to you?
I have a quick question before we get into that. I guess one of the concerns or questions I have is, if you're having a subcommittee, and that's fine, and I would encourage, you know, getting business representation that's over and above what we have here at the EDC, then that committee becomes a subcommittee of the climate action plan folks. If we have our own subcommittee that is comprised solely of EDC members, then it would seem to me that we would have to have a consensus of opinion of what the EDC feels is what we would recommend. Are you seeing the difference of what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
Individual business versus EDC opinion, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
So it would be more liaison group that would be represented.
I mean, if we have liaisons, then that's perfectly fine. But then you're not potentially going to, I mean, you could be in the situation where the liaisons would say, hey, here's what we're thinking, blah, blah, blah. But the subcommittee comes up with a completely different recommendation, whereas EDC may say, no, we think this. So
and I guess I'm
missing
say,
anything here.
Just for me to jump in, I would say, yes, I think we are thinking about the subcommittee primarily as a subcommittee to the CATF, to the Community Advisory right. Task Force, and thinking of the EDC portion of the business subcommittee in more of that liaison role. And if the EDC as a collective group has its own recommendation or position that it wants to take on the climate action plan, we would absolutely welcome that.
Okay.
In addition to what the business subcommittee comes up with.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
And so then, back to my
yes,
question.
Back just, to the question. Yes.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we're plugging people into your process, however we do it. If you need us to get them going, we can reach out and get some names for you. If that's what the Sarahs and Cindy and Monica want, you know.
Well, I would say, I mean, if there's anybody here today who wants to throw their name forward as a liaison to this subcommittee, speak now.
So Monica, you being engagement leader, then that's, it's happening now. We need to get people in. Is that right?
It is happy. Yeah, I would love names as soon as possible, because I would like to convene the business subcommittee within about 2 weeks of convening the CATF, which we're looking at around early to mid June, because we want the groups to be kind of lockstep. So yes, I think nominations now are fantastic, as well as reach out and why don't I add my email to the chat and just include me and Sarah in communications, and feel free to connect people directly. And Laura, I see a hand up, and Commissioner Savas.
Paul, you want to?
Yeah, I just want to share something with you all, and I'm going to put my business hat on for a minute here. I think the we need to have some balance on the business side of the committee, in the sense of experiences perhaps and technologies and so forth. And so let me expand on that just briefly. And that is that there are a lot of industries that have are way ahead, have been for decades way ahead of the curve on frankly emissions, climate, electrification, and so forth. And I think that they can actually bring something to the table, in the sense of where technology is, what they have been doing. And of course, I'm talking about big business. I mean, small business, I think, could learn from that. I think the government could learn from that. I think a lot of us could learn from those experiences. So I will just say, from the world that I grew up in back in the 70s, 80s, electrification, ecology, as we called it, green manufacturing, those were products of the 70s and 80s, and people don't recognize that. And so there's a lot of learned lessons that come forward. And frankly, the reason our air quality is not horrendous today, like it is maybe in other countries, is because of the technology innovations that have come to fore. And as I've said, technology is going to solve our climate problems. It's slow, because it's slow for adaption, education, and integration into our grid, and a number of other barriers. But I think there's a lot that we can learn from some of those industries that are out there waiting. I bought my first forklift, and my first one was electric back in the 80s. I bought my second one in the 90s. So things like that have been out there for a long, long time. And in the association that I was in, we were all alone in the 80s when we talked about ecology and green manufacturing and so forth. And so it's great to see the recognition. But what my point here is today is that by making sure we try to have a business presence of industries that are ahead of the curve, I think we can learn from them. And so we're trying to, I brought this up at the commission with our staff about making sure we get some kind of representation that is part of those industries, those moving industries that are ahead of the curve. So I'll just end there and just let you know that is one of our goals that I personally would like to see, that we have that type of informed representation. Thank you.
And just
thank you, Commissioner.
Real quick, Commissioner Savas, and so you're speaking about making sure we have that representation on the CATF. That was what your recommendation was. Okay. And if you have ideas for industry that you think would be particularly beneficial for a subcommittee, I would be interested in hearing what those are as well.
Yeah, on that note, I think I made it with, I'm not sure who was all in the room from our staff side, but Daimler here in Portland is a great source. I did talk to a couple folks. I know they're engineers over there. So they're a place to tap. Example.
Okay. Laura, you had a question, and then John.
Yeah, actually, thanks, Paul, because you pretty much touched on just about every point I was actually going to make, because I think that even if the EDC subcommittee is generated, it can't just be a personal opinion on what you feel is climate action, right? It has to be a balanced approach for what, because the business community, the business input is absolutely necessary. And even down to the small business because we have to have an understanding of the impact for the decisions on those businesses and what they can afford to do and how long it takes for them to be able to do a transition over to, you know, for the technology that's required for them to shift their business practices. So there's a lot more to it than just a, hey, we want this and this is the grand scheme. And I'm excited, hopefully, that Monica and I, we have visited, that we get to participate as a chamber because we can pull the businesses together for this dialogue. We've been doing that. And so I think it's going to be really important to be able to understand really how complex an issue this is and how and the time it's going to take, right, to develop these changes and implement the changes. So very excited to be part of the conversations. But thanks, Paul, for mentioning all of that. Very, very, very important.
Mr. Lamont.
So I would echo that. And I think, Monica, as we talked to the executive committee, the idea that you could come back at certain times in your process, even all the way through next year, to test things with us, where we get stuff in advance. You say, chew on this, give us your opinion as an overall commission and discussion. I think that'll be great. We can't do it every month, but obviously at certain times. But what I would suggest is that anybody that's interested, send Vance and Sarah Ekman your name, or
send staff.
Staff, okay. Karina and Sarah and Cindy and John, your name, and then put in friends EDC so we can send those on to you so you know it's EDC. But if we also have suggested people that aren't EDC for your other sections, you could sort them all out. But I have one in particular. When I was on the Lake Oswego City Council last year, we appointed new members for the Sustainability Advisory Board. And there was a woman that just stood out. We appointed her right away. She was a former Navy officer and had to deal with bases and ships with waste and power. And she's now with a major solar company. And she's just outstanding. And I just kept thinking, I could send her your name and then see if she, or her name and see if she's interested, but she wouldn't be an EDC representative, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Good suggestion, John. Group. Yes, I think anybody on this committee who wants to participate in the CATF committee, please let staff know. And then hopefully at that point, we can let the board know who is decided to participate in that and use them as liaisons to the CITF. If there's no other questions, we need to move along, keep the agenda clicking along here. Monica and Sarah, thank you for your input and your presentation.
Thank you for having us.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, Business Resource Center survey results. Laura Edmonds.
Can I get a share screen? I'll pop up my presentation.
Yep, you should be able to share, Laura.
All right, thank you. Let me get that open. All righty. So, good morning, everybody. Let me go ahead and get this slideshow so it's easier to run it from the beginning. All right. And I invited, so Kyle Lang with the Canby Chambers on the call with us today too, so that as I go through this presentation and you guys have any questions, I'd like to finish my presentation first and then bring up the questions. And then Kyle's here to help address any other questions that I may not be able to answer. So I'd like to begin with a thanks to the county and the ECDEV team for supporting and providing the opportunity for the business recovery centers. Because when we were asked, all the local chambers jumped right at this, because this fits within our business plans, our goals and objectives. So pretty excited to be able to participate in this. So when we have, so you guys, I can paint a picture. We have 6 business recovery centers supported by 7 chambers of commerce. There are 3 additional chambers in Clackamas County, but they're volunteer run. So basically, we all cover the rest of their territories. So between us, we cover the entirety of Clackamas County. When we first started this program in December, we had 1 month's time, which we were able to reach over 6,600 businesses, as you can see from this, covering just over 1,800 square miles. And we did a major marketing campaign that included mailers, print ads, and direct outreach to the business community. And so what we did was we did targeted mailers for the outlying areas, the more rural parts of the region, so that we can then focus direct calling efforts into our immediate zip codes and areas. So we were able to serve an instant 484 businesses by providing access to financial services, PPE supplies, free consulting services. And then due to our existing relationships, it was easy for us to negotiate reduced rates with trusted professionals and advisors who engaged instantly with the businesses to provide free business counseling, consulting, web design, conversion to e-commerce, social media marketing, legal counsel, and much more. So if you can imagine, I mean, you all know and understand the sheer size of Clackamas County. So the chambers engaged are North Clackamas, Oregon City, Tigard, Tualatin, Wilsonville, Canby, Sandy. And then we all encompass different areas. I think I have six zip codes in my region. Kyle from Canby is covering Estacada, Colton, and the outlying areas out there. So we're trying very, very hard to make sure that we're reaching as many businesses as possible through this initiative. So when we started this work, or we ended in December and came up with this conclusionary report, we also estimated how much more work was going to be needed. Because like in my region alone, we had another probably over 4,000 businesses we hadn't even touched on yet, because time ran out. And although the funding was fantastic, it also ran out too. So we had to renegotiate contracts with the county to be able to come up with additional funding to continue the resources and efforts, because specific staff had to be hired for this work that was very targeted and focused. So we renegotiated. The county was wonderful in providing an additional grant to the BRCs individually, but at a reduced budget that we then were paid in April to continue our work. So we ended up doing a quick survey to be able to understand and really hone in. Then after those conversations took place, we were able to go out and ask pointed questions based on the conversations we'd already been having. So we ended up getting the 131 responses, which was fantastic. And from that survey, we were able to be able to understand, and as you can see here from the different zip codes and the respondents, we were able to be able to glean from that and ascertain specific data points. So most were looking for grant access, because a lot of them couldn't access the grants, or they were, you know, it wasn't enough, they had shortfalls. Then we needed to understand the usage of those grants and what they were still needing and where the gaps were. And so in this case, it was pretty fantastic to be able to really hone in and understand exactly how much, what people were still needing and how much they still needed. So as a restaurant, it gave us an example of a restaurant who is now in closing again on Friday. Their gaps and the money, they're needing probably an estimate of on average for a substantial size restaurant, $45,000 to be able to get them through these downturns. They were reopened, closed, reopened, closed. And so when you look at that and the amount of money that it takes for them to restart every single time, it's $15,000 to $20,000 for them to rehire, retrain, and then then acquire the food again to be able to start up again. So some products and stuff can be frozen, but a lot of it can't. The fresh produce, the fresh, vegetables. So when we look at that, some businesses, it's actually a substantial amount of money for them to restart. Some of them, not so much. It's smaller amounts. But we have to be able to look at this in an equitable fashion when we start to re-engage them again after hopefully May 6th. Let's say that in a perfect world, they can reopen if we go back to a high level risk instead of extreme. But when we look at that, this is where the data is coming from. We asked hiring questions. So when we looked at that data as well, you know, here's more loan information. You have it. I'm not going to go into every single report because you've got it in front of you. But we asked some of the hiring questions. But that too is really complex right now because a lot of employers are making more on unemployment than if they go back to work. And especially if you're looking at some of these, the restaurant, the specific industries or sectors that are those minimum wage jobs, it's harder to rehire those people right now when there isn't stability in the hiring process. So that's been adding some complexities to some of these employers. And then also like retraining, some of the retraining is more complex in the manufacturing and some of the other sectors because they can't find the workers right now to hire because they don't have the skill set to be able to come into the workplace, even at a entry-level position. So working with Bridget and her team is going to be very, very important for us to be able to help support and supply the workforce that's necessary for those sectors that are actually doing well right now. Like Miles Fiberglass is a great example. They had 17 job openings. They were only able to fill 4 or 5 of those. They still have at least 10 or 11 positions open right now that they can't fill. And that's because they can't find the workers. So there's a lot of different complexities there. We asked some different capacity questions.
Sorry, one second. And I think it's important, like in looking at the, you know, getting paid too much on unemployment, closing of daycare, school closures, each of those are singular reasons. Those are actually all kind of compounded and multiple reasons can coexist at once. So while we have each of those individual responses, it actually is kind of a much more complex confluence of forces that are keeping people out.
Great. Perfect. Thank you, Kyle. No, thank you very much. And then, so in this case too, is we asked also what would need to be changed in the future to be able to, you know, get them back up to full capacity and running effectively. And then, and that too was, and that goes back to what Kyle's saying, is that they can't, their employees, some of these businesses can't have virtual employees. They have to have them in-house. They have to be there to be able to do the work. And if the employees don't have the daycare, so this ties perfectly back to what Bridget was talking about, is those constraints that are out of their control, we need to be able to develop these complex systems to be able to support the employer's needs to be able to get their workforce back. And so this perfectly ties in. So today I'm having a meeting with Bridget's team to be able to then infuse this conversation and figure out what we need to do to support each other next steps. And also when we talked, we did ask the question to the employers, is how much of this work can be done for telecommuting options? And it can't be. 81% says we cannot do that. They've got to maintain their offices, their business structure, because it can't be done remotely. So just a lot of good conversation and feedback. That was really it for the survey. We wish we had a little bit more respondents, but that's a nice sampling for the entirety of the region, I think, and different sectors and different industries. So we are currently back at the business recovery work because we do have some additional funding from the county. We are going back to the county to ask for some more funding from the next federal package that they receive. And then we've also done some outreach to the cities and our senators who also have some specific funding coming down the pike. So our focus then is going to be able to do some direct grants for the business recovery centers. We're going to hopefully do some direct grants to the businesses so that we can help them through this next downturn and these partial closures, and then trying to do very specific recoveries based on the survey results on providing services and technology that they need to be able to continue producing the work and the jobs that they need to. So Kyle, anything else that I might have missed? Or I mean, this is a lot. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of complexity. But I think that as the business recovery centers, we've been able to really hone in and figure out what the businesses need to be able to recover and get them back on track. I think the BRCs have also had a conversation with supporting the vaccination centers and maybe even doing working with the county to do some one-offs to be able to get the businesses and set the clinics up based on the businesses' needs. Lake Oswego had a very successful program with their local fire district where they did a quick pop-up one, and the business, and they were able to actually promote it to the businesses who literally brought a carload of their employees in to get vaccinated. And so some of it needs to be very orchestrated, but, and we don't want to take the that away from the county, but some of it and the timing isn't very necessarily suitable for the businesses. And so we're working through those dialogues as well. Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I think in terms of that vaccine business connection, a lot of these folks are shift workers. They can't take time off of work and miss paid hours to go. So we need to start talking about vaccine clinics that run into the evenings that are provided during evening hours, maybe even weekends, and in the communities in which these people live and work. If we're truly sincere about being equitable about the delivery of the vaccine, as well as getting our vaccinated population up to the threshold that will be necessary to be able to come out of this situation and truly reopen, which is assuming what we're all on board for, this is the work that we need to do. And I think that conversation between kind of public health and business needs to happen. And again, the BRCs or the chambers, we feel like we can help facilitate that process.
I don't want to, I mean, we're already past our time and we still have a couple things left to go, but this does touch on an issue that I wanted to bring up, and that I haven't heard anybody talk about the link between business and the vaccine and the requirement. You know, are you seeing a problem with hiring because some businesses, and rightfully so, they have the right to say, if you're going to be employed here, you need to get the vaccine, and running into problems with people saying, well, I don't want to get the vaccine?
Yeah, that's where it's a borderline. I've heard some employers saying that they are making it a mandatory, and the employees are basically being forced to quit, or right, if their belief system or their, and you know, they've got underlying conditions. You have to prove you have underlying conditions in which you can't get it. So the challenge is that legality wise, I'm not sure where you're crossing a legal boundary here. Employers, like if you're a union, if it's not in the union contract that it's mandatory, you have to renegotiate your contracts as a union. You cannot make it mandatory for that job unless you go to renegotiate. And that's fact. In this case, some employers are not making it mandatory. It's because it's a slippery slope that you're going down. So I think that some employers are going to find themselves in a lawsuit if they do that. We'll see what Bully says and what that requirement is. I don't think this can be, it's not that easy and it's not that simple, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I will say that I'm having business owners that are tiptoeing up to that line, and they're mm-hmm. beginning to telegraph that question, at least to me. And so it will become we'll hit that crossroad, and I think they'll make it individually.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Savas, you had a comment?
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted, just to Kyle's point, I just want to let people know there are some vaccine clinics that are open on the weekends. Granted, they're not all shifts, and some people, employees, work on weekends too. But the one at the town center, for example, was open all day Saturday and all day Sunday, and will this Saturday and Sunday as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think not only a trained workforce, but interesting, it's now we're going to be talking about a vaccinated workforce or not.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
John?
Laura, Mm-hmm. Knowing what you've been talking about until today and then what you've reported and then what I heard from our Lake Oswego West Lynn Collaborative Chamber Business Recovery Center, do you see this as a model for us in the long run so that if we can find the funding, we keep these business recovery centers going forever? Or is it just because of COVID and we're going to wind down someday and not need them? I just always encounter smaller chambers are struggling to keep funds in and keep staff in. And mm-hmm. is this a good model to follow forever?
Well, it's a good model because it gives the, for those smaller chambers that are, that want to deliver these services and they are the, you know, they are the delivery mechanism for their community. I think it's a good model because then it helps to support that chamber to do the work that they need to do. Some of us are bigger, so we've already been doing the work, right? We have the flexibility and capabilities to do it ongoing. But the smaller chambers, this has been a turning point for them, and that has made a huge difference for the businesses in their community by having the connected, the access to these resources that they didn't have before. But it's also been really, really critical for us because we're pushing more clients to those other business partners who deliver some of these services as well, like the Small Business Development Center. MISO has been a great partner of all of ours, right, to be able to get businesses. So a lot of businesses are, it's building an awareness out in the community that these resources exist for them, but also it's building a stronger voice for the smaller businesses. And the when you talk about the BIPOC and the out in the rural communities, we have a lot of different languages being spoken that, can be out in the outlying areas, you've got your Russian community. So a lot of them don't have spokespeople or representation to help them to get this kind of information in their own language. So this is another key component where the chambers and the county are partnering because we can offer that translation services so that they can get the help that they need. There's thousands of businesses still falling through the cracks. So the chambers are those trusted advisors where those businesses can come in and get those services that they need. And so it's been really, really critical for us to be able to build that and establish those opportunities.
And I think we formalize a little, and I don't think that's the right word, but we strengthen our chambers by this kind of conduit with the county. Mm-hmm. And then when the Cindy's and John Lagarzas of the world are trying to connect with them and have boots on the street out there looking at all the businesses as best they can, this makes it a little more formal connection to the county. And I just think it's a good model to work from down the road. Because I know the smaller ones, not you, they just struggle with funding and staffing. And mm-hmm. I know they can do more if they had the right staffing model. And if Cindy and John and the county are guiding them, that's even better, you know?
And I do think culturally, you know, for some of these communities, there is a slight aversion to engaging with government. And mm-hmm. chamber can play the role of that buffer between, in which maybe they feel more comfortable coming to us. But because we have that relationship and we have that connectivity between the county and the chamber, that we can kind of grow those relationships.
All right. We need to move along here, folks. So Lynn, do you want to give your update here? And by the way, thank you, Laura, for your presentation. It was really good information.
Yes, I don't know if it might help to share the document, but I'm just gonna, you know, we're really late here, so I'll just kind of whip through this, assuming that most of you were able to open the document. Maybe I will try to share, let me see here. Okay, so, So really, really quickly here, Clackamas County, along with Portland Metro, has been relatively slow to add back jobs that we lost during the pandemic. Now, Clackamas County is up to about 34% of the jobs lost we've made up now. So our employment level in March was up to a little over 154,000. Which is great. And that means that we've added a total of 12,000 jobs just from February to March. So job hiring is happening. You know, we hear a lot of the doom and gloom, but we see positive job growth each month now. And it's and you can see here, it is relatively steep. We had that big fall in April of last year, but we are doing really really well, and the industries that have been adding the most of the jobs have been in leisure and hospitality, almost 4,000 jobs since April. Since the big drop in employment back last year. So, and education, that's private education and health services, 1,500. Construction's adding a lot of jobs. Of course, that's to be noted too, in this time of the year, they would anyway. And retail trade is adding back. So the big losers still, local government, manufacturing hasn't added back as fast. And wholesale trade. So those are the negatives still. But our resident, that's another. Now I have to go back here. There we go. This is the unemployment rate, and you can see where it went shot way up to almost 14% in April. Now we're down to 5.8%. So that is another good sign. But even a better sign to me is our labor force. So the labor force in Clackamas County, that includes people working and those not working but looking for work. So the people in the labor force, as you can see, it dropped way down in September of last year to 210,000. Now we're up to almost 223,000. So that is another good sign. More and more people are either working or looking for work. So we now have the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics. We have the occupational numbers by state for 2020. So we can see what happened here in Oregon. And I would think the same trend would be in the Portland Metro, would be for the Portland Metro area too. But it shows that we kind of teamed up with the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis and kind of did a quick and dirty analysis of the occupations and what it looks like for the state. So you can see what happened from 2019 to 2020. So the big losers here, 20% of the employment were personal care occupations and food preparation occupations, and also sales occupations. And those were all, those top three that lost the most jobs, they were in the low wage category. So the most jobs that were lost were people that were making relatively low wages. And the red is the middle wage categories, and you can see what happened there. Not as much job loss. And up here in the scientific and the agriculture and business and legal, they actually grew jobs from 2019 to 2020. So let me try to get my thing to move here. And the last slide here is kind of looking at, you can see the high wage, low wage, middle wage. The Office of Economic Analysis kind of categorized these by occupation for Oregon. And this is what's happened. Our middle wage jobs, way back from, they started at 2000. They have had pretty much negative growth, and they're projected to not change that much. So we're losing more of the percentage of our middle wage jobs, and our low wage jobs, not as much. So they are expected to grow up to probably 40% by 2025. That's only 5 years from now. But the highest growth now, which is never a good sign, is in our high wage jobs. I don't know exactly know what the categories were the Office of Economic Analysis put these into, but I'm guessing, I don't know what the high wage would start at, 70, 75, something like that, probably. But that's what we are expecting the high wage jobs to grow in. And during the next 5 years, they're expected to grow by 20%. As far as the proportion of these jobs. So I thought that was a really interesting analysis that they did just last week. We were teaming up more and more with the Office of Economic Analysis to do these studies. Any questions? I tried to make it not.
You did great, Lynn.
Topics.
Any questions for Lynn? All right. Well, that concludes our agenda for today. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Bridget, but you made your presentation earlier because you weren't going to be here for this, and then you showed back up. Okay, so is there anything for the good of the order? All right, Shannon's shaking her head no, so apparently we're all good. Thank you for everybody, and we'll see you in a month, if not before. Cheers.
Hi. Oh, that's too funny. I